The following podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome, dear listener, to Echoes of Escheaton, a solo play Degenesis podcast that lets the dice rolls tell the story. You'll find the gripping narratives in this apocalyptic setting unfold before your very ears. You'll hear stories of loss and injustice, redemption and hope. A miasma of gloom drifts across the barren wastes, while nightmarish beasts roam and terrorize cities and settlements. Only mankind's inexhaustible will to survive offers the faintest glimmer of hope on the horizon. The echoing shades of the bygone peoples lingers on the wind and on the lips of survivors in this hell on earth. What stories will they tell? Yelps of pain, shouting soldier commands, and scattered gunfire persisted outside the roll-top door. Sudo could hear boots squeak across the smooth concrete, but she had completely lost her bearings.
Holy shit. Blood. Pouring blood. Reset. Sudo 19. Holy fucking shit. Focus the apparatus.
Sudo was trying to calm herself down, but was overwhelmed at the bloodbath outside. She wanted to shout for help, her inner child grasping for comfort.
Sudo 19. Cycles of breath. Repeat and reset. Sudo 19. Cycles of breath. Repeat and reset.
She anticipated each bout of anxiety as it came up in her chest, and she forced it back down with her mantra.
Repeat and reset.
Sudo continued her calming exercises until her heart was no longer thumping against her sternum. Her shoulder ached from tumbling onto the hard concrete, but she gently flexed her rotator cuff and elbow. She felt no worse for the wear, and her fingertips tapped across the floor, looking for some purchase in the dark to help right herself. They brushed tanned leather, smooth to the touch.
Etta, protector,
she thought. She wanted to speak, to vocalize her pain, but was immediately reminded of her busted vocoder, and she held her tongue. The fumbling chronicler propped herself up and felt further up the leather material sleeve, sensing the shape of a face and locks of hair beneath a large floppy hat. Her padded rubber gloves padded the leather coat, thankfully. Etta awoke frightened into consciousness. She sat bolt upright, nearly knocking heads with Sudo in the dark. The crown of her head throbbed woefully, and she reflexively reached up to massage it, feeling her hat cocked loosely from dragging across the ground. She rubbed her head fiercely to smooth away the pain, and she snapped to her senses.
Kifa!
She gasped. Almost as if the worry of her friend manifested it, white buzz light flickered to life overhead. The harsh fluorescence filled the interior of the porous concrete space, absorbing the ambient light like a sponge around corners of the narrow hallway with 90-degree turns. In the light, Etta made out Sergeant Matthias Nielsen's face. He was conversing with the other Helvetic he had snatched inside at the last moment before closing the door.
And check the perimeter seals and those air filters. The last thing we need is a damn rampant infection from the stragglers who didn't get doused long enough in the wash.
Matthias looked down at the dazed judge coming to and squatted down to check on her.
I had to get you and that chronicler inside in a hurry. Shake it off.
Etta ignored his concern, instead reaching out and grabbing his plated armband.
You've got to go outside and get Kifa Stukov, now!
She pleaded. Matthias absorbed the worried look on her face and shook his head solemnly.
I can't deviate from breach protocol, Judge. These shutters stay closed until we are cleared to open them. Stukov seemed to know what he was doing and how to handle himself. With our Famulets of platoon on duty, I am sure those wretched bosses will present no trouble to him.
Matthias trailed off, not wanting to make promises he couldn't keep. He'd already made enough of those in the Exil settlement. He put a steadying hand on Etta's shoulder.
Come on, let's move to Central Command and away from the door.
Etta stared at the roll-top door, deflated. She hopped up on her feet and readjusted her hat. Her hand lingered on the door for but a moment, unsure of what was on the other side.
You're good at keeping others alive. Do the same for yourself.
The scuffle and noise outside the door faded behind them as Matthias guided everyone around the sharp hallway bend. It led into a low-ceilinged hub room packed with people. Etta and Sudo were impressed at the space inside the room, as it stretched further out than the public-facing wall would have led them to believe. The 35-meter-long walls were lined with a clear plastic sheeting strapped tightly to the interior walls. The plastic air-scrubbing bladders on the wall rose and fell like giant tubular sets of lungs as two dozen or so travelers and laborers huddled together in the center, frayed nerves painting weary faces with gloom and distress. Two Spitalian hygienists administered triage to those afflicted with bruised limbs and malnourished bodies. As she moved closer to center, Etta could feel tiny breezes blow past her cheeks from the small fans circulating the air inside. Her face was flushed with perspiration, and she removed her hat and fiddled with it, nervously.
This must be what the inside of the Spital looks like. White walls and clean plastic everywhere.
The air flowed through large carbon filters mounted in the corners of the room with steel grates framing the intake vents. Sudo stayed close by, twiddling her fingers in a steady rhythm to ground herself as she brushed shoulders with other strangers. After being bumped into several times, the chronicler pecked out a slow message on her digipad, still only having the use of one good arm as she typed. She held the message out in front of Etta, still reeling from the harrowing experiences outside. The message read, "How long are we here? Will we starve?" Etta had almost forgotten she had another mouth to feed. She flagged over Matthias, who was tending to some travelers across the room.
"How long will this quarantine last? Has this happened before?"
Matthias finished his interaction with a mother and child, pointing to the far corner of the room occupied by several Helvetic soldiers and a single Spitalian for aid. His eyes fluttered, encircled by purple flesh under each eyelid. His speech was a bit stilted as he responded, more so than before.
"It's hard to say, but we have been inside the wall for a span of 2 days before without opening the outer doors. Leprous, the rush like this hasn't happened while we've been present, but I've heard stories passed down from previous checkpoint rotations about incursions."
He sniffed, then coughed, beleaguered from his scouting and subsequent retreat to the checkpoint. The adrenaline in his body was wearing off, and his speech had become a bit more slurred as he continued on.
"We've got days and we have provisions for several days. Water gets rerouted from the fungicide tanks to the command hub. It's a series of filters that they make the water clean to drink. No pissing allowed in the public well, though."
Etta and Sudo looked at each other sideways, confused.
"Okay, Sergeant Nielsen. If Kiefer and the others are securing the checkpoint outside, what should we do in the meantime?"
Matthias stared back at her with puffy eyes, darkened further by his protruding brow that shaded his cheeks from the buzzlight overhead.
You can trade or sleep. Relax as best you can. We've got patrols and at all hours, so you can get some rest. Excuse me, please. I need to report in to my newest CO since Boren was outside."
Matthias nodded wearily at them and stepped away, getting lost in a sea of other haggard travelers.
"Looks like Sergeant Nielsen is recovering himself. Let's make ourselves scarce and take a few breaths ourselves."
Sudo's head nodded in agreement, and she focused her attention on several folks in the corner of the wide room. Dealers and vendors had started sitting down in the middle of the concrete floor, blissfully unaware of their lot in life and content to take up space among other bloodied travelers moaning in anguish. The resilient scrappers among the merchants knew the horrors outside had no bearing on the potential profits inside. It was just another day in Borca as far as they were concerned. Sudo is anxious to get her vocoder fixed so she doesn't have to interact without a disguised voice anymore, and has a chance to frighten threats away, especially in closed quarters like this. She approaches a ruddy-faced scrapper, seated on the ground next to her sled and tarp that are still drying out from the fungicide wash prior to her entry. Red cheeks puffed up at the sight of a chronicler approaching her cloth-covered wooden display board held in her lap. Artifacts and goods within the borders of Territorial Regions 3 and 4 come at a premium, but it could be worth it for Sudo to bargain. I'd rule here that Sudo has an idea of what is needed to fix her equipment, but we'll need some additional help in the form of a crafting dice roll to figure out how to put it all together. Difficulty, 3 successes. Action number, 7 dice. Her gloved hand points silently at a dingy-looking transducer, a soldering clip, and an insulator piece. It isn't pretty, but it should service her needs for a repair.
Huh. 40 drafts, Chronicler. Or get the fuck out of my face.
Sudo stands rigidly in front of the scrapper and picks up the electric components. She holds the circuits in her bandaged arm and then quickly snatches a thin wire probe from the scrapper's lap.
Hey, you want me to call the guards over? Give it back, Metal Mouth.
Sudo held it just out of reach of the scrapper and used the stiff pick to scrub dirt and other debris from the crusted over surface of the components.
I said give it back.
Guards, I'm being robbed!
The chronicler smacked the items back on the wooden board and began typing out a new message in a hurry. She held it up angrily in front of the belligerent scrapper. It read, "Dirty components. Shit. 15 drafts for all."
In what world? What are you, one of those brain-damaged ones the cluster hides away?
Sudo could tell she wouldn't get much further with this skinflint scrapper, even by telling her her goods were overpriced. Thankfully, Sudo does have a bargaining chip, and maybe with the help of a roll, she could turn the tables on this scrapper. Sudo is going to roll negotiation to try and coax the scrapper with the kilo of Tech 3 scrap that she got back in episode 11. It pays to keep track of inventory at last. Difficulty, 3 successes. Action number, 7 dice. The scrapper may be hard-nosed, but Sudo has got a better trade. She pulls a pyramidal shape of cast aluminum from the pouch at her waist and sets it in front of the scrapper's wooden lap board. The ruddy-faced woman's eyes gleam at the artifact, and she licks her lips.
Now that is a trade I will make.
The scrapper moved her head around the geometric shape like a cobra, admiring every angle as Sudo perused her wares. The Tech 3 scrap value far supersedes what the scrapper had on offer, so Sudo sees what else she could get for the trade. I'll rule here that the scrapper has a few survival tools and goods for their own personal travels, but more importantly, she has a gas mask with a busted out lens on the face. Sudo's own rubber mask is worn, but still functional. Still, it couldn't hurt to have a spare. I think Etta could even use it if the occasion arises, albeit it won't count as a sealed device in its current state. I think this is fitting for the setting and the trade price is right. No air filter attached, a broken eye lens, and Sudo can clean up the rest of her vocoder with the electrical components. Seems like a fair trade. Sudo held up the mask, making sure to poke her finger through the open eye socket as she brandished it in front of the obsessed scrapper.
Yeah, 10 drafts.
The scrapper replied, still transfixed on the geometric shape. Her dirty, chipped fingernails waved Sudo away annoyingly. Sudo put an iridescent bill on the wooden counter and raked the breathing mask and electrical components, including the unattended wire probe and a set of tweezers, into her cape, held awkwardly like a fabric basket in front of her.
Now, shiny shape, tell me your secrets. Make me rich.
Sudo found a less occupied space inside the central hub and sat down to work on her malfunctioning vocoder. Across the room, Etta is working out her next steps beyond Mulhouse. I mentioned inventory tracking earlier with regards to Sudo, but for the life of me, I can't remember who had the regional map last, if it was Etta or Kiefer. I'll roll a d6, and a result of a 1 or 2 means that Etta has it. And it's a 1. Well, that was handy. Quick decisions like this always make writing flow a lot better for anyone interested in running your own solo game, and if it makes sense for the story, trust yourself. Just keep writing. I guess Kiefer must have handed it over when they started marching the day before they left Exil. A slightly torn and frayed map is spread out in front of Etta as she stoops by a supply bin. Nobody seems to pay her much mind, even though she is the only Judge cult member in the entirety of the checkpoint interior. Bitter and indignant feelings about the Protectorate run rampant this far outside its immediate area of influence, it seems. Etta traces her finger down road lines and over topography as she rubs the growing knot on her scalp. She plucks a dark strand of hair from her head and licks it to help it adhere to the parchment as a sort of makeshift kilometer marker. Let's zoom out for a bit to give our current journey some scope. By a rough estimate, Etta and Sudo have traveled about 440 kilometers from the city of Justician. The map Etta is surveying isn't the best, but it was made by a cartographer at the Justician House of Maps, so distances are accurate. It looks like it's going to be another 600-kilometer journey east towards Lucator. Travel will mainly be across the Alpine Mountains, fortified and patrolled by Helvetic forces. Life-threatening combat risk is extremely low, and more so just about being prepared to face frigid winds at elevation. Still, the segment she is most apprehensive about is the journey under the fortress and across the Hard Path trading route, a heavily secured and monitored segment of terrain that the Helvetics rule with an iron fist. At irregular intervals, unloaded goods and revenues from the Roppen Customs Station to the south are transported towards the Alpine Fortress via the Hard Path. The offset intervals serve as an additional security measure against any isolated attacks. At the same time, the Hard Path is one of the few safe crossing places across the Reaper's Blow to Western Borca, aptly named due to its volcanic activity far below. Etta's supposed exciting and adventurous journey to Lucator now seems anything but. Etta leans her throbbing head back against the supply bin, feeling dejected, unprepared, and above all, drained. The soup she'd had the night before has worn thin in her gut, and she decides to shut her eyes, drowning out the misery surrounding her. It had grown quiet in the time she'd been pondering her map. How long had she been in there? 1 hour? Two? The low hum of the air filter filled her ears and lulled her to sleep. She was sad, but tried to think only of the comforting blackness that filled the edges of her vision. Her eyes opened at the touch of a soft hand at her shoulder. She looked up groggily, the buzz light overhead shining down again on the face of Sergeant Nilsson. Her eyes scanned the room, noting that the other travelers in shock had finally bedded down. The gravely injured among them laid on stretchers on the far side of the walls, hooked up to IVs or Spitalian medical equipment.
How long was I out?
A few hours.
Etta rubbed her eyes with the back of her knuckles and felt down for the map she'd been looking at before she dozed off. It was missing.
Fuck me.
The exasperation in her voice was quickly replaced by embarrassment.
It's my fault. I couldn't fucking be bothered to roll up the goddamn map before I drifted off.
Matthias pulled a folded up square of parchment from his utility belt and held it out with a small smile.
It's all right. It's alright. I thought the kid's drawing on this was a nice distraction until I saw the, House of Map sigil on the top left.
Etta accepted it graciously.
Thank you. Is Sudo still sleeping?
The Chronicler? Seems like it. I can never really tell under those masks. It growled and hissed loudly at a nosy teenager earlier with its... Vocators? Or whatever you call them. There have been problems in the past with those things slipping away under the cover of night with bits of our gear and harassing other people for information.
She has a name. Sudo.
Matthias seemed annoyed at the remark, but let it go.
Fighting outside has died down. No other sepsis leaks inside, and we're well stocked for another 2 days. Just stay out of trouble and keep an eye on your belongings, including that... that Sudo.
Etta nodded, noting the maturity in his response. A blonde Helvetic with a tight ponytail walked briskly up to Matthias and Etta, interjecting with a soldier's gravitas.
Sergeant Nilsson, we've received a radio update on the troop forward operations, including Famulancer Stukov, like you requested.
Etta stiffened, and Matthias hung intently on her words.
Status report, Corporal Eaglin.
He's gone, sir. They all are.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Echoes of Eschaton. I love engaging with my listeners on Twitter at Echoes of Eschaton and via email at echoesofeschaton@gmail.com. So reach out and say hello. I understand there's been some confusion on how to answer polls and Q&As that I ask, so let me address that. At this time, listeners can access the community section only via the Spotify mobile app. Once you're in the app, tap the Echoes of Escheton thumbnail image on any episode in your feed, and you'll see the community section. I can't wait to see your votes and your answers. If you'd like to help the show, there are several ways to do so. You can share it with a friend that loves post-apocalyptic stories, like and retweet show announcements on Twitter, and consider leaving a rating on your podfetcher of choice. Until next time.